Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks to the NBA for scheduling today's Thunder, Grizzlies, and Heat Bulls playoff games directly around our show. That's right, everybody. We're bigger than Oprah. Well, metaphorically speaking. I better shut up now before the ninjas show up. Live from my new self-imposed exile, it's the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network.
Now you're all in big, big trouble.
I like your little game here. I should like to go pro.
It's the worst idea I've ever heard in my life, Tom. Yes.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful. No yelling on the bus.
That's right. I can't have anyone freak out there, okay? We've got to keep our composure.
Not too far.
There's too much to lose. Nothing.
Hi, everybody. Welcome aboard the fun train. I'm Joel Cordes. This is the Average Joe Sports Show, joined by the smartest man alive. That's Dan Lewick. Hi, Dan.
As soon as you said hi, everybody, I was about ready to say hi, Dr. Nick.
That's what I was going for. You picked up on it nicely. That's why you are the smartest man alive. And the 75,000th smartest man alive. Mike Schotte joins us. Hi, Mike.
You better be a doctor after that office visit.
We've got a big show planned for everybody today. Lots of NBA playoff news and banter to talk about. Of course, we have the conference finals on both sides set after the Oklahoma City Thunder dispatched the Memphis Grizzlies today. We'll talk about that as well as the upcoming Heat and Bulls slugfest, which starts out game one tonight. We'll get to that in a little bit here. We'll talk some baseball, updating each of the divisions. Believe it or not, somehow in this marathon of a season, we're already about 25% of the way done with baseball. But Dan Lewick will update us on that. Mike will keep us posted on the things that aren't going on in the NFL. And Will Liebenberg from BleacherReport.com will stop by to talk about the PGA Players Championship. We haven't chatted with Will in a while, so it's good to have him back on the show. That's all coming up in just a little bit. Guys, today let's talk about the rather definitive way in which the Oklahoma City Thunder won Game 7 on their home court, one of the craziest arenas in the league, a 105-90. You wouldn't necessarily say domination, but the Thunder were clearly in the driver's seat throughout the entire game, usually nursing along an 8-12 point lead, and every time Memphis seemed to make a little mini run, the Thunder would jump out and really solidify themselves back in this one. Mike Schotte, what did the Thunder prove to us in gutting out this seven-game series with the upstart Grizzlies?
I think they proved that they're deep enough, which is something that a lot of people have questioned for them, not only this year but years past. But I also think they reiterated to the world that this is a superstar-driven league. And I've said this before, and Kevin Durant is one of those elite superstars who can carry a team, and Russell Westbrook isn't very far behind.
With all that being said, Dan, there were a couple of variables at play here working against the Memphis Grizzlies. One, of course, has to be the fact that Rudy Gay has not played in a number of months, and the fact that in this seven-game series, home court meant a lot. Yes, both teams did steal a game on the road, but probably the two loudest arenas through the playoffs so far have been in Memphis and Oklahoma City. And the Grizzlies had to go on the road here for Game 7. If the Grizzlies would have had Game 7 on their court, and if they would have had Rudy Gay, would it have been enough to move past the Thunder, or had push finally come to shove?
I think it would have been an exciting match to see both teams at full strength, but that's always a case of the if-then type deal, and Home court advantage does mean a lot, especially in a Game 7 situation. The other team is just trying to ride the wave of the other team's energy and just try to stay within close range of them feeding off the fans and then a chance to slow things down and then get back into the game. So, this was a challenge, and they didn't get a superstar production out of Zach Randolph the way the Thunder got out of Kevin Durant. Not that Zach Randolph is to blame for as well as they've done. He's been a huge part of their success. But again, it would have been nice to have Rudy Gay for this series.
Guys, before we break down the upcoming matchups here and make our picks, Mike, I want to ask you about the Eastern Conference side. The Chicago Bulls and the Miami Heat moved past the Atlanta Hawks and the Boston Celtics respectively now in 6 and 5 games. And in both cases, their opponents presented some challenges, but certainly not the type of tough 7-game series that the Thunder just survived. Who's the hotter team right now, knowing that in the Eastern Conference they didn't get a lot of rest because they start right away, but both teams are in rhythm at this point?
I think it's got to be the Chicago Bulls. I don't think there's a team that's playing better right now. If we're talking purely which team is more rested or which team is at the fullest strength, I think this is a team that, because of the way they play, I think they're extremely deep, not from an offensive standpoint, but from a defensive standpoint, and that's what matters on the Chicago Bulls. So I think that if you're looking at all of these teams and saying which team is at the most of what they can do, I think the Chicago Bulls can go out and put a 100% defensive effort, regardless of how much legs the offensive side of things has.
Mike supported the Chicago Bulls here. Dan, I'm going to flip things. I don't know whether this is really your pick or not, but how can the Miami Heat be the ones to win the Eastern Conference Finals and go on to the championship round? What do they need to do to move past the number one seed in the East?
Well, obviously it starts with the big three, but you need other guys to continue to step up. They need that bench to still give them some production. And I think that's the biggest key. It's the way that it's been all year, is that, you know, those three are going to do what they need to do, but then you still need others to step up and provide some support. In terms of picks, every time I pick, I'm guessing wrong, so I'm going to go for a opposite thing. So I'm going to say Chicago, figuring that Miami will win.
I'm going to give the keys here for both before we move to the Western Conference. With the Chicago Bulls, I assure our listeners out there, I am not echoing the pundits. They are echoing me in this case. This, in many ways, comes down to Joakim Noah, because Derrick Rose will obviously have a lot of attention being paid to him. The Heat will not slow him down, but they can make life tough. Carlos Boozer will have a little bit of trouble with Chris Bosh's length, but there is not a single player on the Miami Heat who can guard Joakim Noah and keep him away from the basket. If Noah is active, getting those garbage points, cutting back door, getting out on the break, he will be the X factor for the Chicago Bulls, especially when you consider that the Bulls have the deeper bench anyway. For the Miami Heat, this is going to come down to neutralizing the other options around Rose. Yes, we're probably going to see Dwayne Wade having to guard Derrick Rose, and Rose still has the quickness advantage. Rose is going to get his points, but by moving Wade off of him, this is going to open up guys like Kyle Korver. This is going to obviously put a lock on Luol Deng to be able to get some points and slow down LeBron James. Chicago's bench has a lot of big-time contributors, but Miami needs to neutralize those, realizing that Derrick Rose is going to get his. And then again, the big question will be, can Joel Anthony, can Udonis Haslem, who's returned, can Zydrunas Ilgauskas, how can they deal with Joakim Noah's energy? Before we go to the break, guys, let's talk about the other series now, the Western Conference. Mike, we'll start with you. The Dallas Mavericks swept the Los Angeles Lakers in about as definitive a fashion as possible, absolutely drilling them in Game 4, and yet now they've been sitting and resting for nearly a week before their series against the Oklahoma City Thunder will start. Losing that momentum, what does Dallas need to do in order to win this series?
I don't know if Dallas needs to do anything spectacular or anything out of the ordinary. I think that at least on the starting five, I think they have the better team, and I do think they have enough depth to win this series. I picked Dallas a couple weeks ago. I'll pick them again. I don't think that Oklahoma City has what it takes to get past a team like Dallas. Oklahoma City is a very good team. I love what they did in closing out Memphis. But again, Dirk Nowitzki, I think, is playing as well as anyone in the entire league, and I'm including Derrick Rose in that equation and Kevin Durant. The Mavericks are just too good. The way they dispatched the Lakers, I think they'll have just as much ability to dispatch the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Dan, the Thunder, on the other hand, will obviously not have the rest, but they're not dealing with any injuries, and they definitely have the younger legs. And now they have the momentum. They will not have home court advantage in their series against the Dallas Mavericks. But again, they seem to be, you know, after a little bit of a slow start in the playoffs here, they seem to be settling into a rhythm. And that's a pretty darn scary thing, especially when some of the secondary players like James Harden is drilling threes from everywhere, being aggressive. Russell Westbrook did a fantastic job of distributing the ball today. The Oklahoma City Thunder are going to have momentum behind them. Is it going to be enough to get past the Dallas Mavericks?
Well, what I like about this matchup and seeing if it's enough is going to come down to some defense, and that's one thing that Oklahoma tried to improve on in the trading deadline when they picked up Kendrick Perkins, and that has a chance to allow Serge Ibaka to get a little bit of help back there, and I would love to see the matchup between Dirk Nowitzki and see how he goes up against some of those better defensive players. So Oklahoma has enough talent to get through this between Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook. These guys can score points and score them in a hurry. But what they need is guys like James Harden to have like a game like he had in Game 7. 6-for-10, 17 points, really coming up and stepping in as like a six-man type to help out the offense. So they need guys like that to step up because you know you're going to get it from Durant and Westbrook. Where else is it going to come from?
The Oklahoma City Thunder right now obviously have the younger legs. However, they can only go about 8 or 9 deep into that bench. Nick Collison has been fantastic off the bench. Obviously, James Harden plays starters minutes. Daquan Cook even had a sighting in Game 5, dropping 18 points, although he hasn't been heard from again. But outside of that, the Thunder don't go too deeply into their bench. Nazi Muhammad will play a little bit. Eric Maynor will spot some minutes. But those are not key guys. The Dallas Mavericks, on the other hand, here really have been able to go 10, and if you count Caron Butler lurking out there somewhere, even 11 or 12 deep into this bench, and different guys have been stepping up. Yes, they're going to have to get that rhythm going, but they've got a lot to choose from, and it seems like head coach Rick Carlisle has figured out the rotation there. You could say that Oklahoma City, the Thunder's front line is just as deep as Dallas is. However, you cannot say that about the backcourt. Peja Stojakovic has been fantastic as a wing, so has Sean Marion. Jason Terry is Jason Terry. J.J. Barea has been great for them through the playoffs. So again, they're going to need to be able to get momentum. Don't be surprised if the Oklahoma City Thunder maybe steal Game 1 on the road, but I'm going to take the Dallas Mavericks in a 7-game series here as well, simply based on the fact that their starting lineups may be similar in talent, but the Mavericks by far have more depth. Let's take a quick break here on the Average Joe Sports Show. When we come back, we'll talk a little more NBA basketball. We've got baseball, football, and the PGA Players Championship all lined up and coming up just around the corner. Stay tuned.
I look good. I mean, really good.
Hey, everyone! Come and see how good I look! I'm a man who discovered the wheel and built the Eiffel Tower out of metal and brawn. That's what kind of man I am.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Son of a bee sting, she's turning the entire office against us.
Scorpion woman! Loud noises! I don't know what we're yelling about!
I immediately regret this decision.
What a perfect segue. Thank you, Will Ferrell. Welcome back, everybody, for the Sports Show here on the Sports Geek Radio Network. Echoing in the background somewhere, guys, if you've got your phone turned on or your computer on, turn that off, because I can hear that. I want to remind everybody, Monday, it's the Knee Jerk, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Paul Eno and Big Al Beaton here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. They'll talk everything Detroit, Michigan, Midwest, and world-related sports. That's the knee-jerk, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Guys, let's wrap up some random stuff here, talking about the NBA, looking almost towards the off-season here a little bit already. Dan, I'm going to throw this first question out to you because it definitely falls into your neighborhood, seeing as how Major League Baseball has done this once with the Montreal Expos and is definitely about to step in, it seems, with the Los Angeles Dodgers here in the same way. The Sacramento Kings, it sounded as if they were going to move towards Anaheim. It sounded as if they were gone after a 27-year stint, somewhere around that range, in Sacramento. And then it fell through. Part of this need to leave has been the fact of definitely some income issues in Sacramento with an older arena. But part of it was also based on the fact that the Maloof brothers, the longtime owners now of the Sacramento Kings, the owners during their glory days, seemed to be falling under financial troubles. In fact, part of the deal for them to leave Anaheim and play at the Honda Center was that the city of Anaheim was going to grant them a large loan. That has fallen through, and now the Maloof brothers come crawling back to Sacramento saying, hey, guess what, guys, we'll give you one more chance here, one more year to try and woo us. Dan, at this point, we'll leave whether Sacramento should even want these guys back at this point, but at this point, should the National Basketball Association step in, given the Maloof brothers' obvious financial troubles, and take over the team, much like they just had to do with the New Orleans Hornets?
See, that's what's nice is that there's a precedent. I think that's what you need is that this is a hard issue to get into because anyone can say, sure, yeah, you know, they should just step in and do it. But when you're talking about people who own franchises and the legalities and getting into this, it's not the best scenario. I don't think for anyone would say that this is the best way to go, but sometimes that's just what you have to do. And I think this 1 year isn't just for Sacramento to try to keep their team, but it's also for the Maloofs to show that they have what it takes to keep the team as well. So this year is going to say a lot as to whether the NBA steps in, and they may not even have a full year. The next few months are going to be critical. I think they'll still have them to start the season, but depending upon how that year goes, you could see someone stepping in mid-season and becoming an NBA-operated franchise.
The Maloof brothers heavily invested in Las Vegas, which has obviously taken a number of huge hits, especially in the casino industry during this economic downturn. The Maloof brothers have had some other telltale warning signs, the fact that they still owe money to the city of Sacramento, the fact that they actually had to make trades at the deadline to bring on enough talent just to hit the salary cap minimum. Not the luxury tax threshold, but the minimum, because otherwise they would have gotten fined for not spending enough money. Mike, there's some talent on the Kings. I mean, we can talk about Tyreek Evans, DeMarcus Cousins, and so forth. There's some talent there, but when the owners are jerking the city around like this and then not even fielding a team that's hitting the minimum salary numbers, should Sacramento even want these guys back?
I don't think so. I think the two key points I want to push here is that, one, I don't think the NBA has a whole lot of legal ground to stand on to just remove the Maloofs. There's something to be said. They could remove the Kings as a franchise, thus leaving the Maloofs with a useless basketball team that can't play in the NBA. And that's kind of a bargaining chip that they can use to say, you know, if you don't sell a team or start to make changes, we can just kind of remove you from our league. Through contract, I think that's a much better idea, legally speaking. But also, the Maloofs have just been horrible owners. And I think they thought this was going to be a play toy, and then they started losing money, and then money became the all-important thing because they stopped trying to win. It was like Donald Sterling on steroids. And so, no, I don't think Sacramento should want the Maloofs back. I think they want to keep the Kings, but I don't think they want them with the Maloofs as owners. And I think that as a city, you can easily say that we're going to, you know, Kevin Johnson, the mayor of Sacramento, can say, you know, we want the Kings to stay here, but not if you guys are owners.
Let's give the Maloof brothers credit. They were the owners during the Sacramento Kings' only moment in the sun. That was during the late 90s and early 2000s, where the Rick Adelman-led group, including Mike Bibby, Chris Webber, Vlade Divac, and others, were a legitimate powerhouse in the Western Conference, even making it to the Western Conference Finals a couple of times. That moment didn't last very long due to Chris Webber's injuries, and then the team was blown up. But you're right. I think as soon as they started losing some money and as soon as they ran into some issues here, it stopped being fun. And at this point, it has become a liability, but they don't want to give up on the team because it's going to be such a loss monetarily for them, and obviously one of prestige as well. It's tough when the team comes crawling back, although I bet if you would talk to Seattle Supersonics fans, they sure wish that would have happened there. There's a lot of diehard Kings fans, as surprising as that is. Should the Sacramento Kings move on, this will be the fifth city that they have played in during their time in the National Basketball Association. That's all the time we've got for the round ball topics here right now. There's still a lot left to be discussed. Next week, we'll take a look at another California team, the Los Angeles Lakers, as they search for the replacement to Phil Jackson. There's a lot of names being thrown out there right now. Obviously, assistant Brian Shaw is a big one, but names like Larry Brown, Mike Dunleavy, suddenly starting to pop up during this search. We'll talk about some of the other coaches who have been fired and those who may be on the hot seat. That's all coming up next week on the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. When we return, it's time to update Major League Baseball. We'll hit the American League first. That's next.
Ding, ding, ding.
What do we have for, Johnny?
Even if you swear with the Lord, the state of Mississippi is a little more hard-nosed.
We know where you are at all times. That's our business.
Oh, I'm in a glass case of emotion.
No. It's Iowa.
Holy shnikey.
It's butt cold out here, and I'm fresh out of beer.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Damn.
Broadcast school. Ha, I laugh at thee. Welcome back at the Average Show Sports Show, broadcast school free here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Want to remind everybody to stop by Tuesday and Wednesday nights. It's the Sports Geeks flagship show, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Chris Carter and the gang remind you why it's called the Sports Geeks Radio Network. That's Tuesday, Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Let's move from one round ball to a slightly smaller one. Dan, the Major League Baseball schedule is somehow already a quarter of the way done. Let's start out in the AL East where, of course, we've got a big game on tap for tonight. Yes, it's the old Yankees-Red Sox tiff, but the Red Sox, as slow as they started on the season, they seem to be finding their mojo against the Yankees.
Well, this is a big game and a big part of the series just for the mental aspect of Boston finally no longer being a losing team. They go to 20-20 if they win tonight and sweep the Yankees and furthermore boost their confidence that they're back in the swing of things. They're only 3.5 games back right now of Tampa Bay at the top of the division. So they're very much in contention, but to sweep New York is always a huge plug and also can start sending those nerves chattering through the New York press about what's wrong now in New York with Jorge Posada having his issues about not wanting to bat ninth, although a low batting average kind of tends to be the problem and not where you're batting. So there's some issues going on in the American League East, which makes for fun baseball and fun drama for sure.
Things are awfully tight in the AL East right now, Dan. The only team with a true winning record, Tampa Bay Rays 7-3 in their last 10. The Yankees are 20-17, but they've lost 7 out of their last 10 games. Toronto's 6-4 during that span, and everybody else is playing 500 baseball. Who is the legitimate team in the AL East right now, and who's just pretending?
You know, that's a hard one to answer because I would love to say the Tampa Bay Rays, and they are right now with their record, but at the same time, they have issues at the back end of their rotation right now with Jeff Niemann being out. They're struggling to replace him, and Wade Davis just rattled off his second consecutive bad start. So there's still some questions there because that's what fuels that engine down at Tampa Bay, is if their starting pitching is doing well, and right now, David Price and James Shields probably has the best 1-2 punch in baseball. So they have some definite star talent that's working, and young guys like Matt Joyce are finally stepping up. Thank you, Detroit, for working that one through. So they have the talent to do it, but there's still enough questions, and you need more time to see that bullpen to see whether or not they're legit. New York obviously has got some stuff to work with, too, with their rotation. Toronto has good young pitching, and Bautista has shown that he's not a one-year wonder, as he just hit 3 home runs against the Minnesota Twins today, boosting his major league lead in that category. So looking like a steal for Toronto when they locked him up to a long-term extension at a reasonable rate, he'd probably be looking at near Pujols money if he were coming in to be a free agent in this next season.
Let's move to the American Midwest and the AL Central. I've got a question here for Dan and then for Mike Schotte, being the Detroit Tigers aficionado that he is. Dan, 2 weeks and a little more than 10 games ago, I asked you, almost word for word here, what the heck is going on? The Cleveland Indians leading the AL Central, the Minnesota Twins in the basement, even though everyone, including yours truly and you, predicted just the opposite. Here we are 2 weeks later, and nothing really has changed. Cleveland's number one. Kansas City has fallen to 3, but Chicago and Minnesota are both 4 and 5 in the division. Is this the brave new world that we're going to live in for the rest of the season?
Well, I don't know if Cleveland has locked their entire team in the dugout and just went ahead and decided to play Major League, the movie, constantly until they got drained of their head that maybe these guys can pull off the same thing. But this is definitely your made-for-Hollywood, who-are-these-guys type of a situation, and they're doing really well. They have Grady Sizemore still has some issues with staying healthy and trying to get fully back, but he's looked good when he's been back. Travis Hafner is having a resurgence. The offense is good, but it's just a matter of can this young pitching keep going, and right now they are. So there's no reason at this point to indicate that they're headed for a fall. So they look like they're going to be in contention for the rest of the season. It's only a quarter of the way through, but Cleveland definitely has some talent to work with. And Minnesota, who would have thought they'd be 12.5 games back already by this point of the year? Nothing is going right in the Twin Cities.
Mike, the Detroit Tigers have to be a little bit happy here. Maybe they're not saying it too loudly, but to see the Chicago White Sox and the Minnesota Twins stumble and then trip over their own feet out of the gates here. Detroit hasn't played great baseball, but now suddenly they've won 9 out of their last 10 games, and to steal a line from AC/DC, they're coming on like a hurricane, 22-18. They're just 3.5 games back on those upstart Indians. Is this a wide-open door that the Tigers can take advantage of?
Well, I think there's a lot of things the Tigers need to take advantage of, and it's a lot of small things and one big thing. The big thing is Justin Verlander's pitching. They need to take advantage of that because so often he's had a slow start, then a resurgence, and then usually sometime around May, June, maybe bleeding into the early July, they just don't give him run support. And so he'll go, you know, 4 or 5 games with a no decision or losing, you know, 1-2 run games. And so they need to take advantage of his pitching because he's pitching so phenomenal right now. A no-hitter that was almost a perfect game and then a couple-hitter that was almost a no-no. You know, you have to take advantage of that. You have to take advantage of Brad Penny on his good days because he's going to have good days and bad days. You know that. And when he has a good day, you need to take advantage. You can't lose when he's only given up 1 or 2 runs. And then one of the big things that's really helping them out right now is – not only Johnny Peralta coming in and kind of, I don't want to say solidify him because he hasn't been great, but he has done very well at kind of, from a hitting perspective, being a decent center fielder for them because it's been a while since they've had a guy that they could trust. But when it comes down to it, Victor Martinez is the reason this team is doing so well right now. He came back from injury. He's sitting behind Miguel Cabrera. You can't just put Cabrera on anymore, and Victor Martinez has made teams pay when they do.
Dan, let's move out to the AL West now briefly here before we go to break. Things are strangely consistent, even though a few of the teams might be in surprising spots. Typically, the AL West has 3 teams that are very tight at the top, and then one who falls to the cellar, and lately it's usually been the Seattle Mariners, and that's where they are right now. The LA Angels lead things, but just barely. Texas Rangers, obviously, are the defending champs in the American League. What's going to get the Angels out of the picture here and get the Rangers on track? They had a nice start to the season, and now Texas has been playing very lackluster baseball through their last, 10, 20 games here.
Well, I think the biggest thing is health, and that's always going to be the issue with Texas is Josh Hamilton only has 39 at-bats on the season after being gone, but there's him and Nelson Cruz are two guys that are about ready to return, and that just adds such a different dynamic to that lineup, which is potent near from 1-9. These guys have a huge, huge offense, but really it's continuing to see positives out of their pitching rotation. And Alexi Ogando, who moved up from setup role to starting, has done a fantastic job, along with C.J. Wilson has been solid, and they've had a couple of these guys doing very well, and their bullpen has been doing good now that Neftali Feliz is back doing his thing in the closer role. So they still need some guys to keep moving pitching-wise, but health is going to be the issue as they continue to make their way towards overtaking the Angels in the division.
We're talking Major League Baseball here on the Average Joe Sports Show. We'll hit the National Leagues coming up next.
I want chicken. I want liver. Meow mix, meow mix. Please deliver.
Mr. Evil.
Dr. Evil. I didn't spend 6 years in evil medical school to be called Mr. Thank you very much.
Meaning to talk to you about that. You should find yourself a safe house or a relative close by. Lay low for a while because you're probably wanted for murder.
I have what doctors call a bit of a weight problem.
I'm a maniac on the floor. And I'm dancing like I've never danced before.
I'm retarded.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Joel Cordes, Dan Lewick, and Mike Schotte hanging out with you. Want to remind everybody, stop by Friday evenings. It's the Friday Sports Talk Soup with Vito here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. It's the late show, 10:30 p.m. He'll take you all the way to midnight, rounding out the entire week in sports. You do not want to miss it. That's the Friday Sports Talk Soup with Vito, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Dan Lewick, smartest man alive. We're talking a little bit of baseball here on the Average Joe Sports Show. Time to go to the National League. We'll start out east. The Philadelphia Phillies, obviously, were one of the stories of the offseason. They really have become, for lack of a better way to put it, the New York Yankees of the National League, in that they have really gone out and spent for every major free agent that they could. Yes, they did lose a couple guys in offseason here. There were some question marks, and yet this is a dream team pitching lineup. And so far, Dan, it seems like it's not disappointing. They're 25-14, but there's a couple of legit contenders in the Florida Marlins and the Atlanta Braves nipping at their heels.
One, that's the exciting thing, is that this is a wonderful division to watch, especially if you love pitching. I mean, this is the place to go to. We just had about Tuesday this past week, you had your star-studded Cy Young versus Cy Young pitching matchup between Roy Halladay and Josh Johnson, and it did not disappoint. Both those guys duked it out well for 8 innings, and that was a fun game to watch, especially if you just love baseball and don't have some certain affiliation with the team. It's fun to watch pitching matchups like that. But, yeah, Philadelphia's rotation has been everything they've wanted and then some. They lead the league in fewest runs given up in all of baseball. And their offense is trying to find a way to plot along. I think that's the only challenge, is some of these guys continuing to improve and battle. And right now, Placido Polanco has done a great job filling in, especially with Chase Utley being out so far to start the year. Jimmy Rollins has rebounded after a so-so season last year. 270 batting average, 352 on base percentage, has given them a good veteran presence. But really, the one guy I want to mention for them real quick is Cole Hamels and just his continued development. You know, everything that's shown on Roy Halladay, Roy Oswalt, and Cliff Lee, and those guys very much deserve the attention. But Cole Hamels has continued to develop in his fifth year of pitching. And he's an ERA of barely over 3-4-2 record. He's among the league leaders in strikeouts. He's been very, very good this year. and sometimes gets overlooked in that dominant rotation.
Only a little ways back in the division are the Washington Nationals and the New York Mets, largely anticipated to be down in the 4 and 5 seeds. And yet the Nationals were supposed to be better this year. They're hanging around 500 right now. The Mets were not, and yet they're awfully close to 500. Can they feel good about their standings at this time, even though they're at the bottom of this very, very competitive division?
Anything that the Mets can do to take the fans' focus off of Bernie Madoff and anything of that regard is a positive. So, yeah, they have some fun guys to watch, some guys that are coming back, but there's a lot of vultures that are kind of wandering around the city field just because of guys that are going to be in their walk years. Jose Reyes isn't expected to stay on the team too much longer because he's a free agent at the end of the year, and he might get them something attractive by the trading deadline. Same thing with Carlos Beltran, outfielder, who can get them something good in the trading deadline as well. These are two guys that are not going to be on the team next year, and if they can get something positive for them, they'll be better off for it. So the record is nice, but some of the guys that are getting them to that record won't be around in another month or so. But hopefully the goal is to, again, get something that's going to help them next year and beyond versus just this season, when even if they get a 500 record, that doesn't get them any closer than where they want to go. Washington, some young talent to keep an eye on. Again, once Steven Strasburg returns, they have Bryce Harper, the number one overall draft pick from last year's draft, has been excelling greatly in the minors, and they think he could be called up soon, if not this year, by next year. So there's some young talent that they're starting to assemble to where, and they're willing to spend. So Washington is another team to keep an eye on as they try to improve this year, but especially going into next season.
Let's move on to the biggest division in baseball, at least quantity-wise. That's the NL Central. Dan, the Cincinnati Reds won the division last year, and there were some question marks as to whether they might be a one-year wonder, and yet here they are leading the Central again, and familiar faces right behind them, the St. Louis Cardinals. Milwaukee Brewers, as surprising as their offseason was, they're still a couple games under 500, but sitting in third right now. Who's the team to beat at the top of that division? Is it still legitimately the Cincinnati Reds?
I think it still is. Cincinnati is a team where it's still wanting to watch how they do with their pitching, but their offense is just phenomenal. Right now they have the second-best offense in baseball and first-best in the National League. These guys have been very, very good behind Joey Votto, their first baseman, and Jay Bruce is continuing his development. He's only 23 years old, but it seems like he's been around in the majors and in their outfield forever, and he's got 8 home runs to begin the year here. So guys are stepping up and doing very well, and that offense is what's fueling them. And again, rotation-wise, if some of these guys continue to do well, Bronson Arroyo's having a good start to the year. So you need some guys like this to keep going, but that rotation isn't it still has a lot of leaks. That offense can carry them in some of these 7-5 games, but that's going to be a problem as you get nearer and closer to playoff time that I don't think they have the pitching they need to keep going.
Dan, let's talk about the bottom of the division very quickly before we go to break here. Crawling around the cellar are the usual suspects. Pittsburgh Pirates, 18-22. Cubs are 17-21. Astros at an abysmal 15-25. Out of those three teams, which is the one team that's giving its fans at least a modicum of reason to be happy or hopeful?
I would say Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has given their fans, they kind of faded back after getting to a 500 record here within the last week, and they kind of lost 4 or 5 in a row to kind of slip back down. But they have some exciting guys to watch. Neil Walker is probably going to be their, or has a chance to be their, All-Star representative. Andrew McCutchen's been very, very good, but Walker's been having a very good year out of second base. And then you have guys like Pedro Alvarez, their third baseman, who is a top draft pick within the last couple of seasons here, and some young guys that are going to be around for a while. And so that's where the excitement is that they're finally building something. It's never really went anywhere with some of the other stuff, which was just cast-off veterans and guys who, if they were going to have a prime, it wasn't going to be with the Pirates. So they kind of have some talent that's developing and giving fans at least a reason to go to the ballpark.
We'll talk the NL West coming up next, as well as an NFL update from Mike Schotte. You're listening to the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network.
We want this and that. We demand a share in that and most of that, some of this, less of that, and more of this, plenty of this. Nothing. We want it now. I want it yesterday. I want more tomorrow. And the demands will all be changed then, so stay away.
Why are you the way that you are? Honestly, every time I try to do something fun or exciting, you make it not that way. I hate so much about the things that you choose to be.
I have an excellent idea. Let's change the subject.
I say no. Let's stay on the same subject. Joel Cordes, Dan Liu again, Mike Schotte here on the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Talking some Major League Baseball. Everybody stay tuned. We'll talk some NFL football with Mike Schotte in a couple minutes here. Will Liebenberg from BleacherReport.com is still on the docket. He'll stop by to talk about the PGA Players Championship. Before we do that, though, Dan, let's wrap things up with the National League West Division. Again, almost like the AL West, things are eerily similar to how they always are. It's always tight out in the NL West. This year is no exception. 5.5 games separate the top and the bottom teams. Yes, the San Francisco Giants are out front. Yes, they are the reigning champions at this point. But it doesn't seem like anyone's ever really out of contention for that division.
And I think this is the year that that finally changes. The Colorado Rockies have put forth a very good year. They're not in first right now, but they're still creeping up the hind end here of San Francisco, an only game and a half back with a 20-18 record. But they've been doing a lot of these things without some of their key players. Carlos Gonzalez has not really been hitting the way he did last year, especially batting only a .234 average. So if they can get him going, the rest of that lineup is looking solid, especially with Todd Helton giving him one last push at getting into his old age here. It's looked very good for them, and Trey Tulowitzki is looking right now as a front runner for an MVP candidate in the National League. But their pitching has finally developed to the point of if they get their former Cy Young winner, whose name is escaping me, finally back from injury, and if he can come back along with Julio Urshela and Jorge De La Rosa, both these guys have been very solid for them to form a would be an excellent 1-2-3 punch. They have some guys that are finally developing pitching-wise, which can be just as exciting as their lineup.
Last question here before we move over to the National Football League. Dan, if you're a member of the L.A. Dodgers right now, your head just has to be spinning with all of the moves and counter-moves, not only made by the president and owner, Frank McCourt, obviously going through the divorce settlement, but now from Major League Baseball. How do you cope with literally not knowing whether you'll get your paycheck at the end of the month?
Well, I think this is one where some way or another they'll get their paycheck. It doesn't matter who's signing it. Is it going to be McCourt or is it going to be Major League Baseball? So people are going to get paid. But the frustration here is Bud Selig is trying to strong-arm another individual where I don't think it's correct. He's got a great deal that he got with Fox to get them, you know, maybe some upfront money to keep the team and keep things going, but a great move for the franchise as well. The frustration here is that this is a guy who's going through a bitter divorce, and, of course, when you go through that, there goes 50% of everything you own. And I don't want to get into right and wrong on that, but just of the, here's the guy who's doing what he can to keep what he's earned. The guy became the owner of this team. He deserves to keep it. And with Major League Baseball not helping them out enough to kind of get through this as he's found a way to keep himself sustaining, I think it's frustrating to see baseball starting to pick and choose who they want to own this franchise.
Mike, let's flip over now to the National Football League. Similar, obviously, issues going on between ownership, between the league administration, and then you throw in the players as another side to the arguments happening right now. It's just a sign of the economic times that we live in. The lockout continues now. We're pushing over 2 months at this point, and there's some people who are starting to get a little bit worried Is the NFL and maybe the players' union, or is it the owners, but are either side, both sides, in danger of alienating fans at this point? Because we're getting close to that time where, you know, camp is starting to be a thought on everybody's mind.
Yeah, Robert Kraft, owner of the Patriots and Kraft Foods, spoke at the Sports Science Conference like he does every year, and kind of said that they're at the risk of alienating fans at this point, and they need to get a deal done. This all predicates a round of negotiations that is coming up, but everyone that I'm talking to and every report that I'm reading is saying this is all just a little bit more bluster. Both sides are going into the negotiating room really with the sole purpose of looking like they're negotiating. It's going through the motions for the fans, for the legal aspect of things. Nothing is supposed to get done. And the reason is what I've said all along, nothing has changed. This is still all about leverage. Neither side has enough leverage to get the deal they want. The NFL is clearly saying football are not at all with this lockout. And the NFL Players Association is saying, you know, football the way it was. You know, they're not trying to change anything from the status quo. They're simply trying to say, we had a pretty good deal before. You guys liked it enough 6-7 years ago to agree to it. Either show us why, or we'd like the exact same thing. And neither side has budged from that stance, and I don't think either side will, regardless of who thinks people are alienating. To that point, however, Mike Silver from Yahoo Sports was recently on Pro Football Talk Live and said kind of the opposite, that people aren't angry about this yet. People have opinions. People are willing to say things online where there's a degree of anonymity, but they're just not angry yet. It's wide-scale fan movement that people thought we were going to start seeing, and that just hasn't happened yet because football doesn't happen right now anyway. This is the time that we all watch the NHL playoffs, the NBA playoffs, and when we start missing football games, that's when people will get angry. But as of right now, I don't think anyone's alienated.
What you're saying is the players are okay, the owners and administration are largely okay, the fans even seem to be understanding enough, and yet there are a few franchises out there right now that really do need the lockout to end. They need to get back on the field, and they need to start generating revenue again. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think that when you look at teams, whether or not they're going to be okay or in trouble during the lockout, what you have to look is teams that are changing systems and teams that are bringing in a large amount of rookies. The teams that I isolated three teams that I think definitely want a lockout over sooner rather than later, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, for none of the reasons I listed above. However, this is a team that had so much momentum, a young quarterback in Josh Freeman who was just hitting his stride. He needs another full offseason to continue to be a down-the-field pocket passer. But the biggest reason they're struggling right now is with no league year in place. There's also no policy to deal with troubled players or substance abuse. And the Bucs seemingly have had another player arrested almost every week. Every time we turn around, there's another Buccaneer that's in legal trouble. And I don't know if that's a systemic thing about the coaching or about the atmosphere in Tampa Bay, but they need to talk it over so their players can stay out of jail. Moving on, the Carolina Panthers, obviously Cam Newton coming in. They have a new coaching staff from top to bottom. They need to get Cam Newton in, not just having a playbook in his hand, but also having the coaching to teach him the nuances between a spread offense and what he's going to be doing in the NFL. But also just a chance to see him side by side with Jimmy Clausen. People have written off Clausen, but there's a solid chance Clausen plays a little bit this year while Cam Newton gets his feet wet in the NFL. But they need to see these two side by side. They can't make that distinction while both are home on their couches. Last but not least, the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns had a good season last year, a lot better than people thought. But Colt McCoy is moving from a pretty simplistic pro-style offense to now he's going to be doing a West Coast offense that plays his strengths, but it's also an extremely complex offense. They also hired Dick Duran as the defensive coordinator. He's going to be running some sort of a cover, too. We're not quite sure what that's going to look like in Cleveland, but with an offensive and defensive coordinator coming in, they need to get those players in. So those three teams, the Bucs, the Panthers, and the Cleveland Browns, need this lockout to be over.
Mike Schotte, Dan Luig, you're both extremely busy dudes, so we'll let you both go here. We're going to be talking PGA golf with Will Liebenberg from BleacherReport.com. That's coming up next. Thank you, gentlemen, both for a fabulous show, as always. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you guys.
Will Liebenberg joins us here on the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network when we come back.
Finally, those capitalist pigs will pay for their crimes, eh? Hey, comrade,
what if he shot me in the face?
That's the risk we were willing to take.
And you choose to thank me by throwing a knife at my head?
There's no crying in baseball!
I want you to know that your father loves you both very much.
But he feels like a girl.
So did Martina Navratilova.
What were you doing exactly?
I was eating pie.
Putting Chet Billy emptiness inside me? But it'll help.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. We don't need a bigger boat. There's only two of us now. Joel Cordes hanging out with Will Liebenberg from BleacherReport.com. Will, good to hear from you again.
Hey, Joel. Thanks for having me.
Another big week when it comes to the PGA Tour. This time it's the Players Championship, and this event did not disappoint, whether it's KJ Choi coming out of nowhere once again to capture the headlines, or a few other big stories. We'll leave the Tiger stuff alone for a couple minutes here. But let's talk about the biggest surprises, the biggest headlines from what turned out to be another entertaining weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, this is the fourth week in a row, actually, that the PGA Tour has had a playoff event. And so that's very, very strange for the PGA Tour because that's kind of a rare thing that happens. But, you know, the Players' Championship is really considered the fifth major championship of the season, primarily because, you know, the difficulty of the course paired with, you know, a star-studded field. But it was really all about KJ Choi. And if you think about it, it's really no surprise that he came through in this event because he always kind of comes through in the biggest events. Remember, he actually finished tied for eighth at this year's Masters, the fourth at the Masters the year before. And he's just got that aggressive nature about him where he really comes through in the highest pressured events. And, you know, he stepped up to 17, that island green, and made a birdie on the 17th to put him in the playoff. And, you know, David Toms put up a pretty good fight, but unfortunately it was all about KJ Choi this week.
Let's talk about any of the other competitors who really stood out to you, either as surprisingly successful or maybe as a disappointment. And, again, we'll hold off on the Tiger stuff for a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's funny because Luke Donald has been just playing out of his mind this season. He earned his seventh consecutive top 10 finish of the year with this finish. And Nick Watney did the same thing. He actually, his fifth top 10, but both guys are playing incredibly well. And each of their play is a testament to just how solid their short game is. All week, Nick Watney was finding the bunker. And, you know, a lot of times when, you know, the average guy gets out there and finds the sand, it's pretty much the end of the round. It's pretty hard to get out of the bunker. But these guys, it's like they're bread and butter, you know. They choose to hit the ball in there sometimes. And Nick Watney and Luke Donald, too, they both are such wizards out of the bunker. It's incredible. And both guys are ranked 1 and 2 in scrambling on the PGA Tour. So, you know, they're hot right now. They really are. And one other guy, actually, too, Jason Day, the young Australian kid who you probably remember was making a lot of noise aside Adam Scott and Charles Schwartzel at the Masters. He climbed up into the top 10 with his fourth top 10 finish of the season also, and he shot a 4-under par 68 today, which, you know, for a 23-year-old kid out on the PGA Tour is a pretty big deal. So he's shown that he can compete with the rest of them.
Now let's talk about the Tiger Woods early withdrawal. There's a lot of different reasons, rumors, stories surrounding this. It was certainly a surprise, even to somebody who's only a marginal golf follower such as myself. What's the magnitude of his withdrawal here, and what's really going on?
All right, well, let's get something straight. First of all, this guy's not really a role model, okay? And if there was ever a question about that, his reputation in terms of being that kind of icon for little kids, for example, who might love the game, that's tarnished. You know, when his infidelities came out initially and he went through his, you know, time off in the game, that was obviously an issue. It was a major blow to his image.
But now, to walk off the course in the middle of the round, you're obviously struggling and not even attempting to hide that frustration, by the way, it's immature and it's childish. And the truth is, it's especially fragmenting to his image because when you think back to 2008 at the U.S. Open, which was at Torrey Pines, you know, he was glorified for that event because not only did he win, but he won under the pain that his Achilles was that was giving him. And, you know, there were so many images of him kind of hitting the tee shot and then limping off the tee box. And, you know, he shoots a 42 on the front nine of the Players' Championship, which really had the potential to be the event that would have given him the momentum coming to the U.S. Open in the middle of June. And, you know, he struggles, shoots his 42, and walks off. And it's especially also frustrating because just the day before, with the media, when asked about any pain in his leg, he totally blew him off and said, you know what, I'm feeling fine, next question. Feeling fine, next question. And that's been that tendency. And, you know, it was rough to see. And in terms of the long run, he's only four off of Jack's pace. You know, he's got 14 major championships, and the fact that he is still contending at the Masters this year, at both the Masters and U.S. Open last year, you know, he's always got it up his sleeve. But, over the last few years, I guess, you know, we don't really know what Tiger we're going to get when he steps onto the course.
To me, it would be the same thing as if Michael Jordan had a bad game and then simply walked out for the rest of the series. Now, we know Jordan retired three times, but at least in the first two times, he was at the top of his game. Certainly just extremely surprising here. Let's change to a couple of other bits of information, bits of news here from the PGA world, I suppose you could say, in the last 2 minutes on the show. Ernie Els makes it into the Hall of Fame. How deserving is that pick along with the others that went in? You've got 1 minute.
Yeah, you know, Ernie Els has the sweetest foot in golf. You know, his reason is called the Big Easy. He's the biggest guy on tour, 6'3". He's also got the seemingly most effortless, fluid golf swing. But in addition to that, you know, he's a three-time major champion, got 18 wins on the PGA Tour, and he's also so well-rounded. He's a huge philanthropist, most prominent for raising awareness for autism, which his son was diagnosed with. And in addition, he's even had the Ernie Els Foundation outside of golf, which is meant to, you know, recognize and develop talent in the youth right out of South Africa, which is his own country, and that's brought in Louis Oosthuizen, who was the 2010 Open champion, as well as Charles Schwartzel, who was the Masters winner as well. So he is definitely, definitely deserving of that honor.
Some sad news to round things out, obviously, was the passing of Seve Ballesteros, a great golfer in his own time. What's the legacy that he leaves behind?
Yeah, you know, when you talk about Seve, you're talking about one of the greatest the game has ever seen and undeniably the greatest Spanish golfer of all time. He was an ambassador for the sport, you know. Between the 1970s and 1990s, there were a few better than Seve, and his short game was really, really what he'll always be remembered for. And it led to three British Open championships, two Masters victories, and it really is why he is the all-time leader in European Tour victories as well, you know, beyond Bernhard Langer, beyond Tiger. He's got 50 European Tour victories. And, you know, he left an indelible impression upon the world of golf, and he'll be missed.
Will Liebenberg, BleacherReport.com, stopping by. Great work as always, Will. We will look forward to catching up with you here a little bit later on in the tour. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
That's Will Liebenberg from BleacherReport.com. Be sure to head over to that website. Check out Will's great PGA golf writing and others. Want to thank Dan Luig. Want to thank Mike Schotte for joining us on the program. Next week, we'll hope to get you a NASCAR update. Hopefully, we can scrounge up Nick Robot. Holt's still working on that. We'll definitely tackle some NBA topics. The playoffs are still going on. We'll get you updated on the NHL playoffs as well. And, of course, there's always some baseball and football to talk about when Mike and Dan are around. For Mike Schotte, for Dan Luig, I'm Joel Cordes, bidding you all adieu. We'll be back same time, same place next week. This is the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network.
take away our phones, and you can take away our keys, but you cannot take away our dreams.
That's right, because we're like sleeping when we have...
What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.